I turn to the Chaldeans. Thanks a lot, guys. You've saved my life. Had it not been for you...
Get away with you!
Grinning, Lavina offered me a steaming bowl full of stew made with smoked meat, roots, and herbs.
Shut up and eat.
I nodded my gratitude, accepting the delicious offer. Do you know what it was? I asked her.
Vapri,
she said curtly. Aha. Did that mean they were familiar with that little beastie? Vapri? I asked, faking incomprehension.
Yes, Vapri. One of the five ice duries. She's the horror of this land. The true Lady of Rockwood. Legends say it was her who gave life to the first Black Groves. I never thought I might see her in the flesh one day.
Didn't she say something about her sisters?
You shouldn't believe everything she says,
Lavina said absent-mindedly. She kept turning around, peering into the impenetrable woods.
Our old shaman used to say his scrolls only mentioned three of them,
Badwar mumbled through a mouthful of his stew.
The other two have never showed themselves to us. I always thought those were just fairy tales for the kids. And now this.
Vapri means power over dreams in some ancient tongue,
Lavina added.
Our shaman used to tell us stories about her, too.
So only three of them have been described, then, I murmured, thinking.
Exactly,
Lavina said.
The other two are Nurki and Aes, or so the scrolls say.
Power over woods and mighty mountain,
Badwar translated.
They say that Nurki prowls the world in the shape of a giant she-wolf,
Lavina added. And Aes? What does she look like? I asked.
We know little about her. Some say she lives in the damp cliffs. Her skin and heart are made of stone, and her eyes are blocks of ice. That's all we know. I used to think they were children's stories. Yeah, right. So many things have changed over these last few days.
Did you say she'd been sitting right next to us and we didn't see her? What was she doing?
Badwar asked. Who? That monster? I really don't know, I said. At first, she looked like an alven woman, only she was very small. She spoke to me, inviting me to stay and abandon you. And then my breathing stopped. I couldn't move. I thought I was dying.
You were lucky,
Lavina said softly.
Normally, Vapri assumes the shape of a loved one. A lost son, a dead husband, or an old mother who's long joined her ancestors in their celestial halls. The Lady of Dreams has many faces. We know her better than the others, because she just won't leave the Chaldean people alone.
She's committed many a black deed.
Badwar clenched his fists.
Old legend said that she could appear to a group of warriors resting by the campfire at night, pretending to be their dead leader, casting her charms over them and luring them into the woods. There were stories about deserted villages where everything remained untouched. The livestock still in their barns, and people's possessions still in their homes. Only a whole bunch of footprints leading toward Rock Wood. But today, the dreadful legend has ceased to exist.
Badwar's face glowed with triumph. I chuckled. You could say that. I bet the whole forest heard her screaming. We might get other nasty visitors in a moment. The sooner we move on, the better.
I don't think so,
Bad War said.
I could bet my poleaxe that no beast will dare come anywhere near this place for a while. They all know what happens to those who stands in Vapri's way when she hunts.
Lavina smiled.
How are they supposed to know she became prey this time? Nothing will happen if we stay here for a while. We need a break, after all.
Bad War paused, thinking, then nodded.
Very well. Let's stay and wait for the main group.
Then he cast her a begging glance.
Is there any more of that stew left? I'd never eaten anything like it, I swear.
Chapter 26. We advanced much faster now. The forest was changing, becoming clearer and less dense. We didn't have to fight our way through the brambles and undergrowth anymore. Everything pointed at us approaching the sea. Short, squat trees, which looked more like oversized shrubs, were scattered amid the many glades and clearings. The dark, rich, heavy soil had been replaced by layers of yellow sand. Sand was everywhere here. It spread in the rippling waves, compacted by the incessant sea winds. The trees had all but disappeared, replaced by gnarly, low plants which crept over the sand. Sun-bleached and eroded by the briny breeze, they were determined to survive. As we walked through this sparse, sandy forest, I couldn't help thinking about nature's variety. You can spend hours watching all the changes. This very area might once have been the seabed, once inhabited with fish and other marine creatures. Then again, what was I talking about? This was only a game. The sand was just as pregnant with history as the dark soil of the forest. I scooped up handfuls of it and brought them up to my eyes, letting it slip through my fingers as I studied the tiny white, pink, and purple fragments of seashells where clams had once lived. Withered bits of seaweed and tiny fragments of rocks. Kudos to the game designers. They'd done an incredible job. I shook the remaining sand off my hands and wiped them on my pants, sensing a thin residue still clinging to my palms. I brought my hand to my face and licked the tip of a finger. It tasted salty. The sea wasn't very far away. Droy, and not only him, found my actions amusing. Actually, the Chaldeans had cheered up a lot. The excitement of the journey's end was palpable in the air. Orman, who knew this area well, had told us that if we continued in this direction, we might soon reach the old lighthouse, probably sometime during the coming night. According to him, there was a small settlement there, 5 or 6 houses where we could ask for lodgings for the night. Then he became crestfallen. He must have remembered I'd already been here. I'm so sorry, my friend. There's nobody here anymore. Only Yunai and his sea tigers, the last survivors. I'd love to know how they were doing, actually. I had lots of presents waiting for them. It had been 3 days after the night battle with Vapri. The shock of meeting her had gradually worn off over those 3 days, dissolving into the air over our numerous stops and campsites. We hadn't seen any evidence of large mobs here anymore. Their packs tended to move further to the left from the route I'd chosen. Shorv's men had stopped going on extended recons. It was my job now. Open spaces were my forte. As we traveled, my Chaldeans did quite a bit of herb gathering. Rock wood was a true treasure trove of all sorts of plants. The clan's herbalists and medicine women had the time of their lives scooping up everything under their feet like combine harvesters. All the healing herbs, roots, and tree buds, which they then used to prepare all sorts of potions and bandages. The news of Vapree, the Lady of Dreams, being slain had spread like wildfire. The locals greeted us as heroes, cheering Lavina the Vixen and her archery skill. The day was on the decline. The sun was about to retire to its celestial halls. It hurried to share its last golden rays with the tired travelers, saying goodbye to Earth and preparing to relinquish its duties to its younger sister, Moon. Our caravan of about 3,000 Chaldeans was making its way through the sparse wood, trying to stay in the shade of the low trees. From above, our column resembled a giant speckled ribbon, which snaked warily along the unknown path. Many of the Chaldeans had recognized these places. This gave them the extra bit of strength they needed. Some of them even ventured into the woods, although they never strayed too far, and only accompanied by warriors. The commanders turned a blind eye to these forays. But the men deserved a bit of fun. They'd been great throughout this perilous journey. Also, I was keeping an eye on them from above anyway. Soon, the path took us to a large field, surrounded by a dilapidated picket fence. After the multi-day trek through the woods, the panorama of the open space held the promise of freedom. We stopped by the field's edge. Reclaimed from the woods, it was now overgrown with grayish, waist-high weeds. The wind ruffled the sturdy plants which had survived the tough winter. The rippling, dirty yellow sea of grass seemed to glow against the leaden backdrop of the darkening sky. The combination was quite spine-chilling. The fence was made of rows of crooked, horizontal planks, nailed to low stakes, gray and rotting. It must have served to protect the crops from some of the larger mobs. The gaps between the planks were wide enough to let in smaller animals, but not a herd of reindeer, for instance. It was also entwined with some thorny creepers. Longhorn animal skulls were mounted on some of the stakes. The fence had sagged and collapsed in places. When I approached it, I heard a strange humming sound coming from the field. Focusing, I realized it was coming from skulls, which served as makeshift guardians, scaring away birds and animals. This field used to belong to a small Chaldean clan long before the Horde had arrived here. Their shaman hadn't been present at the famous council. He'd probably never made it. The Chaldeans' mood had changed. Instinctively, the warriors stood back to back, weapons at the ready. They seemed to be expecting an invisible enemy to charge at them from the wood. All conversations had stopped. Any wayward travelers had rejoined the ranks. Warily, the caravan moved along, skirting the abandoned field. The skull's song followed us for a long time afterward, urging us to leave the spooky opening. Even when we finally re-entered the safety of the woods, the clan didn't regain its cheerful mood. They walked in silence, casting frequent glances back and peering into the falling darkness. Only when we decided to stop for the night did the tension subside somewhat. Hundreds of campfires shot into the sky in a large forest meadow, filling it with the aromas of food and smoke. Our stew was ready and poured into wooden bowls, which we passed around. In the meantime, Orman reached into the fire and produced a bird baked in clay. An appetizing juice oozed from the cracks in it. Orman had baked the bird feathers and all. Now he was breaking up the clay, which came off together with skin, revealing the tender, piping-hot meat underneath. A heady aroma hung over the fire. Shorv crouched next to me.
"Did you notice?"
he whispered. "That someone is following us?" I said, without lifting my eyes from my food. I did.
"Yeah, I noticed it this morning. They might catch up with us tomorrow. You know who it is?"
"No idea. They're disguised really well. I didn't dare get down any lower. They've been following us since yesterday morning in small groups. Twice they disturbed the birds. I think they know we've noticed them. You're right. They'll probably catch up with us by midday tomorrow."
"I'd love to know who it is,"
he mouthed. "They're definitely sentient. Had they been animals or Noctians, they would have already declared themselves." I didn't like it. We had another hard day in front of us. Our pursuers had been following us since the very next day after our battle with Vapree. I remembered some advice from a survival expert I'd seen on the net. According to him, in order to find your bearings in a forest, you needed to find an elevated spot, like a cliff, hill, or a tree. Or Boris's back, I added mentally. Those who followed us seemed to know everything about my skills. I could bet my life they were players. Rogues, most likely, or someone with excellent stealthing skills. Still, even they couldn't have foreseen everything, like the birds they'd disturbed. Even though all I could see was a smattering of tiny black dots, I was pretty sure our pursuit was rather big. A very large creature, or even a group. Closer to the evening, I went on another recon, just for my own peace of mind. Everything was quiet. Then some birds took to the wing again. This was no coincidence. We were being followed. The next day, my suspicions were confirmed. Our pursuers were catching up with us. Shorv noticed them, too. I didn't want to alert the others. A panicking tribe was the last thing we needed. We informed the warriors. Common tribespeople didn't need to know. Droy increased our speed. Luckily, the terrain allowed us to walk faster. We planned on reaching the cliffs by the seashore, which offered us an excellent foothold for confronting any unwanted guests. The night passed uneventfully. Closer to midday, we finally reached the seashore. The sea was raging, throwing tall, gray waves against a lone black cliff, on top of which towered an old lighthouse, built with huge slabs of stone. Like a fairy tale giant, it stood proud over the furious surf, which attempted to swallow it whole. Next to it, I realized my own insignificance, unworthy of the element's wrath. The sea was beautiful. It raised the winds to such a crescendo that we couldn't hear each other over their roar. Mountainous waves broke against the cliffs, shooting cascades of spray into the air. The breeze sprinkled our faces with brine. Immediately, our clothes turned wet. Our hands and faces were covered in a fine sprinkling of salt. We'd made it. The corridor of cliffs welcomed us, calm and silent, its high vaulted roof dripping brine on our heads. The mere sight of it was breathtaking. It must have taken the sea many centuries to have cut this narrow passage through these cliffs, which now resembled the insides of a giant snake or dragon. Strangely enough, the passage was well lit inside. Sun rays seeped through the many cracks covering the rock ceiling, illuminating the walls that glistened with water.
"Part of the group will stay here," Droy told his captains when the last cart of our caravan had disappeared into the passage. "We'll post the archers on the clifftops. The foot soldiers will defend the passage. I don't think we'll need the cavalry here. Bevan the Raven and his men will meet the enemy on the other side." "If the enemy makes it to the other side," Bad War growled, "which I doubt."
The others met his words with predatory smiles on their bearded faces.
"Take up your positions," Droy snapped.
Our army shifted into action. 400 warriors, more than half of our little army, stayed by the cliffs outside to cover our retreat. Our upgrading to blue gear was already in full swing by then. Admittedly, it was taking longer than our initial swap to green. Making rare class items took more time and demanded higher skill levels. That's not to even mention the fact that our masters had to work on the go. You can't do much without a proper workshop. Still, they'd been doing their best. At least we had plenty of materials, courtesy of the Ennin Treasury. So now, a blue and green army stood in the enemy's path.
"Can't see a thing in this fog,"
Droy whispered, peeking from behind a large boulder. Indeed, despite the proximity of the sea, the entire area in front of the cliffs was covered in an unnaturally white mist.
"I think it's them casting it,"
I whispered. Droy almost choked with surprise. He stuck his head above the boulder and began casting angry glares around.
"Get down," I told him. "You won't see anything like that."
"What are we going to do?"
he asked.
"Nothing yet. Tell everyone to keep their heads down and pretend we haven't noticed anything. Pass it on down the line. Judging by their behavior, they're not local. They're players, either light or dark."
Droy nodded.
"In that case, let's wait till they attack."
"Exactly." I was about to add something else when Shorv's hand lay on my shoulder. I looked at him. Shorv put his finger to his lips and nodded in the direction of the fog. I took a wary look over the boulder. Oh. He was right. The white haze was thinning out.
"Sir Olgerd! Mr. Ivanenko! How are you?"
I wearily rolled my eyes. Not that voice again. Just when I thought I'd finally gotten rid of him. I stood up.
"I'm fine, Tanner. Thank you. How are you?"
I'd like to talk to you, Sir Olgerd. Could you tell your cutthroats to hold their fire, please? Depends what you've come here with, I shouted back, never forgetting for one moment the guy was the Steel Shirt Scout. I turned to Droy. If you smell a rat, just shoot. He flashed me a bloodthirsty grin. I vaulted over the boulder and stood at the foot of the cliff. All my little arsenal was ready. The fix box fully charged, the summoning charms ready for activation, the little mirror snuggled in my left hand. A wave of quiet cheers ran over the Kaltean ranks as I activated all the buffs. In the meantime, the fog had retreated, revealing the slim alven figure of my arch-enemy. As I walked closer, I managed to work out the fog's nature. The Shroud of Death. How appropriate. Definitely a necro spell. Which was excellent, considering my friendly footing with that particular class. Tanner hadn't changed one bit. Still the same squeaky clean self, delicate and sophisticated. His face did bear the signs of fatigue, though. No wonder. Trekking across no man's lands was a bit different from prancing around in the Citadel. He flashed me a pearly smile. You've changed a lot. You haven't, I replied, stopping a few feet away from him. I'm listening. The sooner we get this over with, the better. We have too many things to do. Tanner cast a quick glance behind my back. Of course. You're the leader of a whole nation now, aren't you? He sounded dead serious. How weird. Was it my imagination, or was he sucking up to me? I ignored his question. Do I understand correctly you're here to deliver more threats and ultimatums? I'm afraid you'll be wasting your time. He waved his hands at me. Not at all! Why would I do something like that? I chuckled. Why wouldn't you? It wouldn't be the first time. He shrugged. You made the right decision leaving Enon City. Still, why did you do it? He seemed to be avoiding the subject. Had he come here with the proverbial carrot? What do you mean, why? I said. I'm not mad, you know, having to battle two allied armies and the Noctian horde to boot. My warriors' lives are too important to me. Of course, he said with a knowing smile. That's why you refuse to sacrifice your NPCs in order to activate the obelisk. We couldn't work out why you did it. Our analyst's conclusion was that you'd simply failed to locate the obelisk, so you just left. Are you surprised? Oh, no, not at all. You decided to keep the clan instead. This strategy has a much bigger potential in the long run. He didn't understand, did he? Never mind. It was better that way. Let him think whatever he wanted. His underestimation of me worked to my advantage. So the city is yours now? I asked. His face darkened. Yeah, sort of. Today, at least. Tomorrow, I don't know. We'll see. Why haven't you activated the obelisk, then? Let's put it this way. We won't be gaining a lot from it. Whatever that was supposed to mean. Aha, I see. Now, about the matter at hand. Sir Olgerd, I have the power to offer you a peace treaty. An alliance, if you wish. So that's what it was, then. I'd thought it would come to this. Of course. They didn't have enough resources to come after me, did they? They had them all tied up in their little scramble for Twilight Castle. while in the meantime, I could afford to level up my own resources at leisure. So you want to have your cake and eat it, Sir Tanner? Very well. I smiled to him. Sounds good. A peace treaty to begin with, and then we'll see. Wasn't it Cicero who said that a bad peace is better than a good war? Are you happy with my reply? He beamed.
Absolutely. More than happy.
He heaved a sigh of relief. Congratulations, my friend. I lay my hand on Droy's shoulders. He stood listlessly in front of a large log house. A tear rolled down his cheek. It looked like my Droy the Fang used to be an important landowner in this part of the world. Before the Noctians had come, that is. The house was a beauty. The barns, the outhouses, a large cattle yard. Everything still in good shape, virtually untouched.
Thank you, my friend.
Droy looked up at me with his open, grateful gaze.
That night, the skies took my best friends, but in their mercy they sent you instead. You gave me my old house back, and not just mine. You gave us our homes back.
He showed me his farm and his household, telling me how he planned to improve them. He and I, we had so much in common. He was just a man like myself. Someone who loved his home and his family. Boris soared on the air currents, enjoying his flight over the valley. What a beautiful place. Silver mountains. Like a towering, rocky stockade, they shielded the valley from the northern winds. A giant lake glistened below amid the lush green of endless gardens and groves. So what do you think, kiddo? Do you like the Chaldeans' home? Do you think Sveta and Krista might like it here too? Sensing my mood, Boris opened his powerful beak and shattered the skies with his triumphant, aquiline cry. We landed on top of the hill. I threw my arms around Boris's muscular neck, then activated the summoning charm. I gave one last studying look at the valley below. Lots of work to do. Not now, though. Later. I focused on the log out button. You can't imagine how happy I was to press it. A short epilogue. Darkness. Boundless and intangible. Infinite. It feels scary and comforting at the same time. Nameless it is. Boundless and unending. Holding the whole world within its embrace. It has no face nor soul. Still, it's not empty. Because I'm there. I don't yet know who I am. I can neither sense nor see myself. I don't feel anything. Still, I can think. Therefore, I am. Wait a sec. I know that expression. It's been around for centuries. Centuries? Does that mean there's more to the world than this darkness? Of course. Now I remember. It's time. My thoughts begin forming a chain, gradually bringing more memories out of my subconscious. Obediently, darkness succumbs to them and steps back. My awakening hurt. The dull throbbing in my temples echoed down my neck and shoulders in sharp, piercing pulses. Impaled on thousands of little icy spikes, my frozen, numb body refused to come out of its hibernation. The cumbersome, leaden quilt of mental fog lay heavy on my weak, awakening mind. Like a young blade of grass reaching for the sun, my brain strained its every cell, trying to resurface from the darkness enveloping my subconscious. Finally, it shot out, its fiery flower blossoming within my mind and filling my body with joyful life. Slowly, I tried to part my eyelids. A thick, cloudy film prevented me from seeing clearly. I blinked a few times, but the obstacle wouldn't go. Mechanically, I raised my right hand to wipe my eyes. My fingers hit something. Their numb nerves refused to send signals to the brain, thus not allowing me to identify the obstacle. After several fruitless attempts to remove the annoying item, my arm felt unbearably heavy. I summoned up all my strength and tried to hoist myself onto one elbow. A dull pain spread over my limp body. It didn't work. I needed some rest. A heavy, feverish slumber came over me. I awoke from a bright, warm light seeping through my shut eyelids. My ears felt blocked. Without opening my eyes, I tried to move my fingers and toes. They seemed to be okay. The unpleasant, throbbing pain was gone. Sensitivity had returned to my fingers. I could hear voices coming through the rubbery silence. The familiar beeping of a life support machine. A door opened, then closed, letting in the sound of approaching footsteps. This felt like a hospital bed. No wonder. How long had I spent in the capsule? Several months? Why was it so cold? Did they keep me in the fridge? Something warm, soft, and gentle lay on my cheek. It felt good. My unyielding lips began to stretch into a smile. My eyelids parted. Through the cloudy haze in front of my eyes, I made out the vague, blurred outline of a human face. The soft, warm touch moved to my other cheek. It was a hand, a very small one. Then I heard a voice. So dear it was, so familiar, and so warm.
Daddy, are you back now?
This concludes The Twilight Obelisk by Alexei Usadchuk. Narrated by Kyle McCarley. Copyright 2017 by Alexei Usadchuk. English translation copyright 2017 by Irene and Neil P. Woodhead. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Magic Dome Books and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.